The Village of Bolton Heritage Conservation District Plan. The second meeting will be regarding the Six Villages Community Improvement Plan, which includes Alton, Caledon Village, Cheltenham, Inglewood, Mona Mills, and Palgrave. The purpose of these public meetings is to gather input from the public concerning the plans. Any members of the public who have written concerns or appeals dealing with the plans being heard should be directed to the town clerk's office. Any interested persons in wishing further notification regarding any of the plans to be advised to clearly print their name and address on the notification list located on the table outside the entrance of the council table, which I saw a lot of people sign tonight. Following the presentations, the members of the public will be invited to approach the podium, stating their name and address, and provide their comments. We ask the members of the public to clearly state their name and address as it's recorded and it's for public record. If you have any presentation material, please provide the copy to the recording secretary at the desk on your left. And please note that any information submitted this evening will be formed the part of the town's record. Following the public's comments, members of council will be invited to ask questions to the presenter regarding the information contained within the presentation. Please note, council members are here to listen to the comments of the public. They're not here to provide an opinion or debate on the matter. And I will also ask Sally Drummond, I will now ask Sally Drummond, the Heritage Resource Officer, the Town of Caledon, to confirm that the notification conducted in accordance with the Planning Act for the public meeting.
Mr. Mayor, it was actually conducted under the Ontario Heritage Act, but it has been completed.
Thank you for the clarification on that. Thank you very much, Ms. Drummond. I will now call on Rose Thompson, ERA Architects, to begin her presentation. Rose, come forward.
Thank you. Okay. Good evening. I'm Alex Rose Thompson, a planner with ERA Architects. ERA Architects has been working on the Village of Bolton Heritage Conservation District project for the last 2 years, and we are excited to be presenting the finalized HCD plan to the community and council tonight. The last 2 years have included an extensive community consultation process, but tonight's public information meeting constitutes the official public meeting as required by the Ontario Heritage Act. A heritage conservation district is an area with a concentration of heritage resources with a special character or historical association that distinguishes it from its surroundings. The purpose of HCD designation and the development of a plan is to identify what is special about a place and to determine how best to protect and enhance the place as changes occur in the future. The recognition to protect these special qualities is expressed through the enactment of a municipal bylaw under the Ontario Heritage Act, which designates the area as a heritage district. The HCD designation process is divided into two phases. In the first phase, research and analysis of the study area determined that sufficient cultural heritage value existed in a portion of the village to warrant designation as an HCD. About a year ago, Council endorsed the HCD study recommendation, and a plan has since been developed that details the objectives, guidelines, and procedures needed to conserve the cultural heritage value and attributes of the proposed district. Why a heritage district in the Village of Bolton? First and foremost, an HCD will help to preserve the special qualities and character of the village that the community has articulated and that ERA has identified through our research and visits. In order to preserve these special qualities and character, a clear long-term vision is needed, which has the ability to influence other future Bolton policies and affect public investment in the area. The plan includes a comprehensive set of design guidelines, which provide a clear framework for the assessment of proposed changes, which can be used by property owners, tenants, staff, council, and other review agencies. Lastly, HCD designation can provide an access to a variety of financial incentives, as well as help to connect the community to heritage conservation resources and information. The proposed HCD boundary was developed in the study phase and reassessed in the plan phase. The criteria set out in the Ministry of Tourism, Culture and Sports Ontario Heritage Toolkit were used to delineate this boundary, including historic factors, visual factors, physical factors, as well as legal and planning factors. This boundary encompasses the historic mill settlement of Bolton on the Humber River, which is centered on the crossroads of King and Queen Streets with a commercial downtown supported by residential neighborhoods and all set within a dramatic valley setting. This map also depicts the concentration of contributing properties, Those are properties that have design, historical, or contextual value that contribute to the district. These properties are shown in orange. This assessment of the properties helped to define this boundary, notably leading to a reduction in size from the original study boundary. Jumped ahead. Okay. Under the Ontario Heritage Act, there are specific consultation requirements which must be met. In the study phase, a presentation to Heritage Committee is required, as well as in the plan phase, a presentation to the Heritage Committee, making information relating to the plan available to the public, and one public meeting. At ERA, we do not feel that these requirements adequately or meaningfully engage the community in the process, and so we developed a Bolton-specific approach that was multifaceted, iterative, and comprehensive. For example, this included much more face-to-face time in both the study and plan phases, including 4 property owner workshops, 5 community meetings, and 6 stakeholder advisory committee meetings. Through this community consultation process, we clearly heard and understood from the community what the priorities for the future of the village should be. We discussed concerns, and most significantly, the process allowed us to develop a plan that was tailored to the community in terms of format and accessibility, relevant design guideline topics, an approach to alterations that responded to local conditions, as well as the desires of property owners for flexibility in new design. Following feedback on the draft Village of Bolton HCD plan from the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, the October 6th community meeting, and the October 19th Heritage Caledon presentation, the plan has now been finalized and has been made available electronically and in hard copy at the Town Hall since October 30th. This slide highlights the key components of the plan, and the items in bolded text indicate that they are Ontario Heritage Act requirements. And to reiterate, this plan is implemented through a bylaw approved by Council. I would now like to highlight some of these planned components, and I want to note that the items that are not included in this presentation have been included in poster format in the foyer. The statement of objectives represents the community's heritage-related goals and aspirations for the future of the village. These objectives were drafted in the study phase and refined in the plan phase. They are directly related to feedback from the questionnaire in the study phase, as well as all the feedback from community meetings. Beyond the first objective, they are all very clearly linked to the community's understanding and appreciation of the village as a whole, rather than a collection of component parts. For example, the last bullet speaks to the enhancement of the village ambiance by promoting improvements to the public realm. I want to emphasize that these objectives are not only about creating a visitor destination, but equally, if not more importantly, they are about improving Bolton as a place to live for Bolton residents. This map illustrates the different sets of design guidelines, and given that the village continues to maintain a variety of land uses, there was a need to address the different built conditions and uses by providing tailored sets of design guidelines. For compatibility purposes, the design guideline areas follow the boundaries of the Bolton Core Land Use Plan. The intention was also to improve the usability of the plan by helping readers easily locate relevant design guidelines when they were developing proposals. Lastly, I just want to note that this map once again visually reinforces the structure of the village, showing the commercial core at its heart with the adjacent residential streets all nestled within the Green Valley Bowl. We've included a couple examples of the design guidelines to highlight their structure and format. This is a residential design guideline for new garages. And through the community consultation process, we are asked that the plan be highly illustrative and heavy with visuals. So firstly, you'll note that all the design guidelines have corresponding section tabs on their side so that readers can easily navigate. Secondly, this example includes a diagram which shows the acceptable locations for new garages, as well as a sidebar suggesting compatible garage door designs in the context and setting of historic buildings. These sorts of sidebars on the right are included throughout the guideline sections, and they're intended to act as supplementary information as opposed to actual strict design guidelines. This slide is a commercial design guideline for signage and lighting. And I use this slide because I want to include how we marked both positive and negative examples of designs. And community members, as well as the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, recommended this practice because they felt that negative examples could be equally as useful as positive ones. And so this has been included throughout the guidelines. I now want to introduce the proposed heritage permit process. So HCD designation under the Ontario Heritage Act requires that permits be obtained for alterations and the erection, demolition, and relocation of buildings. This heritage permit process has been developed with the town staff and is intended to dovetail with the existing building permit and development approvals process. So this flowchart illustrates the three possible routes that a proposed project may take. In the first instance, no heritage permit is required, and that is due to the minor nature of the work. Or a minor heritage permit is required, and staff has the delegated approval authority to make a decision and issue the permit. Or lastly, a major heritage permit is required, which would involve review by Heritage Caledon and Council. I want to emphasize that the majority of projects will fall under the minor heritage route, and as you'll see on the following slides, the major heritage permit route is really for large new construction projects, which will not arise as frequently. Town staff anticipate that a minor heritage permit will take approximately 5 days to process, which is in line with the current fast-track building permit process. If in either permit process an applicant is unhappy or dissatisfied with the decision, they may first appeal to council if it is a minor permit, or appeal to the Ontario Municipal Board if it is a council decision. So under the Ontario Heritage Act, a list of minor alterations must be developed, which includes small works and maintenance items that would not require heritage permits. So, for example, maintenance works such as installing or replacing eaves troughs or downpipes do not require permits. And this list was developed in consultation with the community and includes some very common items that you would see in other districts, as well as some Bolton-specific ones, so such as one of the last bullet points, which is the construction of rear patio decks. So that was something that was seen as not needing a heritage permit and not having a major impact in the village. This is a list of works that would fall under the minor heritage permit stream, and the red italicized writing indicates whether a building permit would be required for these works. And really, I'm just wanting to demonstrate that in the majority of the time, a lot of these works will require building permits already, and so the idea is that a heritage permit process will just simply go along in tandem with that permit process and not add an additional layer or the need to gather more information. And again, I just want to emphasize that these works will be can be reviewed and processed by staff, which will definitely speed up the processing time for applicants. Oh. Okay. So works that will have a larger and more notable impact to the district will require a major heritage permit, which would include review by Heritage Caledon Council. This is recognized by the Ontario Heritage Act, and so you can see that the three items would be relocation of a building, demolition of a building, or the construction of a new building. And the reason for this is that Council provides an important public forum for discussion and allows for questions from both proponents and concerned community members. In addition, we have also included additions to a commercial building in this category that are visible from the public realm. And I just want to clarify that this does not mean any visibility from the public realm, but rather we're looking at properties that span a full block. So examples on Queen Street North, where they span from Queen Street to either Chapel Street at the rear or the municipal parking lot at the rear. So these are really very visible properties. The HCD designation in the Village of Bolton is a long-term vision and planning exercise. We cannot expect results overnight, but looking forward, we can expect incremental positive change. This is the positive change that's being experienced in over 121 heritage districts across the province. HCDs tend to have a snowball effect. One property owner makes an improvement, and then someone down the road is inspired to do so as well. This is particularly true when financial incentives are available. This slide shows a commercial building in downtown Orangeville with a corporate tenant. On the right, the tenant has taken advantage of a grant program and designed a much more sympathetic and attractive storefront. Orangeville's downtown HCD has been in operation for 13 years now, and their main street has seen gradual improvements, including civic investment in the public realm, which has led it to be a very successful and prosperous downtown. It was recently awarded top street in Canada by the Canadian Institute of Planners as part of their annual Great Places in Canada contest. Below, I've included an example of a restoration of a cottage in Cabbage Town North HCD. This has been operating for about 12 years, and I just wanted to include it as an example of when you see a building that appears to have little heritage value and had all sorts of unsympathetic alterations, and actually after some revealing, you actually find quite an amazing building underneath. Beyond commercial and residential projects, HCDs can also stimulate investment by the public and even the private sector in the public realm. This can range from tailored street signs, distinctive gateway entrance features, to street furniture inspired by local heritage narratives. Bigger improvements, such as in Market Square in Kingston, include a complete renovation to the square to the farmers market, as well as a temperature-controlled ice rink for winter. And interestingly, this was largely paid by a private donor who was inspired by the HCD there. A heritage district designation, Bolton has the potential for all of these improvements. The adoption of the Bolton Master Transportation Plan is very timely, as it includes many significant public realm improvements to Queen Street North, all of which support the objectives and design guidelines included in this plan. In terms of next steps following tonight, there will be a report to Council that is anticipated to take place on December 8th. If the Council adopts the plan and passes a municipal bylaw, the town will serve notice of the designation on all property owners within the district. Any person who objects to the bylaw may appeal to the Ontario Municipal Board within 30 days of the above notice. Ultimately, the Village of Bolton is a special place. We feel it and the community knows it. There is great potential for the Village to seize this opportunity and to build upon its special character and setting, both for existing and future residents, and to differentiate itself as a visitor destination in the Humber Valley. The Village of Bolton HCD plan provides a framework and vision for reaching these goals. Thank you for your time tonight, and I now invite questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rose Thompson. If there are any comments from the members of the public that are here tonight, and if there are, please step forward to the podium, clearly state your name and address, please.
Good evening. My name is Valerie Mackey, and I live at 83 King Street East in Bolton. I first of all would like to present written comments from Jerry Gorman, who lives within the proposed HCD area. He was unable to attend this evening. And secondly, I would like to present and pass over to Barb the results of a canvas that I did within the HCD. First of all, in among the residential homes, and secondly, among commercial, predominantly business operators, business owners, also within the boundaries of the HCD. And I'm presenting to you 41 residential signatures in support of the proposed Village of Bolton Heritage Conservation District and 23 business owner signatures in support of the proposed Village of Bolton Heritage Conservation District. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else from the public that wish to come forward?
My name is Jim McFall, and I live at 97 King Street East. Thank you for the opportunity to address the council and Mr. Mayor. If memory serves, my grandfather Arthur was a municipal politician in the area. I think he served as reeve for the town of Bolton in the early 1920s. My wife Mary and I live in the Mill Cottage, which I believe is the oldest structure in Bolton. And it dates back to the 1840s. And grandfather Andrew McFall purchased it in 1881. My father, David McFall, had it designated under the Local Conservation Architectural Advisory Committee 35 years ago. And we have had full enjoyment and use of the house during that period without any disruption due to that designation. Indeed, when we built a garage, it was a pleasure to work with Sally to align the design of the garage with the design of the house. And as the current study indicates, the adoption of a Bolton HCD will improve both the quality of the area and property values for residents of the area. So I'm confident that I can speak on behalf of the current McFaul family and past members when I say that we fully support the adoption of the HCD. Thank you.
Anyone else from the public?
Good evening. My name is Christine Cooper. I live at 188 Beaver Avenue in Bolton. Your Worship, Council. The iconic and all-knowing goddess of community planning, the late Jane Jacobs, once said, "The remarkable intricacy and liveliness of downtown can never be created by the abstract logic of a few men." So for that, I'd like to thank the town of Caledon for undertaking such an engaging and encouraging participation of public process. And as the town and the council decide on whether or not Bolton would receive its heritage conservation district designation. I, for one, a 30-year resident, a community volunteer, a former business owner, and once a member of the BIA myself, fully appreciate the privilege and the opportunity to give input on the future of my community. And I have been engaged in this process since the onset, having sat in many public meetings, having read all the reports, and having listened to many of the perspectives, both pro and con. These decisions are game changers. It can be an act of building a great legacy, or as some would like to have you believe it, it could be a questionable planning mistake that will become a pebble in the shoe of Bolton for years to come. As a citizen who is heavily invested in her community, that is a decision I do not take lightly. But what I believe is that these decisions can literally become defibrillators, reviving a failing heartbeat. And when supported properly, they can create a community fabric that is rich, diverse, embracing, eclectic, and in my own personal opinion, would restore the dignity and the heritage and the history that Bolton so deserves to have protected. I don't live in the HCD footprint. I do, however, live in the adjacent neighborhood to it. I live in the original North Hill subdivision that has walking linkages to the downtown core in the big bowl of Bolton. And being part of the downtown core is pretty much an everyday part of my life. As a Bolton resident, I support the application for HCD designation. And coming to that position of support took me some time because I waffled on it for a while because I wasn't always so sure that it was the right thing to do. Because once it's done, it can bring a different set of challenges for a community. But after the last public meeting where there was so much more pronounced and visible groundswell of support for the HCD, it convinced me that this designation was integral to the vitality of the downtown of Bolton. So I want to thank particularly Valerie and Susan Fulcher for standing up at the last public meeting. You kind of got my head turned back around the right way. It also made me realize that this decision simply isn't just about the businesses, but it is a decision that will impact this community as a whole. And albeit in all due respect, the businesses are important, and I'm not dismissing their value or their input, but they are only one part of this decision, and I would ask that when this decision is made, that you would respectfully and wisely consider the much broader perspective and all the stakeholders, simply not just the businesses. I stepped back and I closely examined the footprint of the HCD and looking at who it might have repercussions on, both good and negative, both long and short term. And I came to the realization that this decision could literally rescue, restore, augment, revitalize, and then all topped with a splash of conviviality, breathe life back into the downtown core. But most of all, it would give Bolton a long overdue shot of dignity. And this community of Bolton could really use a shot of dignity. Just a few weeks back, I read a letter in the local newspaper from a woman named Nancy Easton who was commiserating about the pending development in Caledon East. In the last line of her letter, I quote, "We are Caledon East, not Brampton North or Bolton West." Really? Really? I'm tired of Bolton being considered the second-class community of Gallatin. I don't know Nancy Easton, but I would say to her, this is what I would say to her. We find our strength as a community in our differences, not in our similarities. And with that being said, you may well live in Gallatin East, but you are a resident of Gallatin, as is every person who lives in Bolton and every other village in this town. You need to show some respect. Please, Mrs. Easton, come over to Bolton, and I'll show you so much about the community that I love. Enacting the HCD would be a giant step forward in the building of the bridge of respect for Bolton. And Jane Jacobs also said, you can't rely on bringing people downtown. You have to put them there. It's that kind of if you build it, they will come thinking. And timing is everything. And here and now is Bolton's time. It only took us 40 years and five or possibly six mayors to get a bypass, but we got it. The trucking bylaw has been put into place for full implementation, and large truck traffic will be diverted from the core, and the traffic will be calming, and that will put the people back in the core. Roundabouts have been put into place, and again, much like the bypass, this will take some time to take hold. And in the few years, the core of Bolton will become much more pedestrian-friendly. This will take time, but time is on Bolton's side. The Cenotaph sits inside the HC footprint, hosting a national war monument. In the heart of the HCD, the Bolton Farmers Market is alive and booming, with an average of 500 to 1,000 visitors each Saturday it is open. The Bolton Fire Hall will be moving, and that part of the core, along with the ground of the former Legion, will be redeveloping, as will be the streetscaping. And the Green Pea parking area and the adjacent parking lots are in full swing. The walking path system that lead in and out of the HCD area have been beautifully developed by the Humber Valley Heritage Trail Association and the TRCA. And if that isn't enough, smack dab right through the middle of the HCD footprint, we have been gifted by Mother Nature with the Humber River, which is a designated World Heritage River, replete with its herons and its fish ladders. Bolton will soon begin preparation for its sesquicentennial. Now, there's a mouthful. What a gift the HCD could be for this community. And the HCD could be the catalyst to galvanize Bolton's unique identity and be a tie that could bind a multitude of community-based organizations who I'm confident would embrace this designation. And if any of you are aware of the flagpoles in Bolton at the Cenotaph, you'll know what I'm talking about. When a community wants to come together, when they believe, they'll come out. The HCD could open up a gateway to a plethora of federal, provincial, and historical funding streams, from everything from infrastructure repairs to streetscaping. Funds such as the Laurel Hill Cemetery Board is now tapping into for the purpose of restoration protection of our war memorials. And Carol Whitehead, I think I saw you back there. Thank you for educating me today about the beautiful war memorial and the Bolton Cenotaph. I'd suggest you guys find out what that's all about. The HCD will provide Gallatin with what we call a low-hanging fruit opportunity. And in time, we've seen the kinds of changes an HCD can bring. And Orangeville, our neighbors to the north of us, is a great example of this. And I listened to a local businessman about how here, those of us in Bolton cannot compare ourselves to Orangeville. Well, I beg to differ on that point. As a matter of fact, we should be comparing the two communities. We were both founded approximately at the same time. We are both approximately a six-mile geographic footprint. We currently support a similar population density. We are both commuter communities. We are both communities very much under the seas of development, and we have plenty in common. And we have seen the benefits and the fruits of the labor of Orangeville have had from bestowing their community with an HCD designation by the recently awarded designation of Canada's best street. So I'll close with two comments. First, to the town of Gallatin, please don't make me regret what I wish for. You wonder why John Q. business owners are barking like mad dogs, waving around their faux business surveys that we know have absolutely no empirical value? If the HCD is implemented, then you damn well need to make it a community, residential, and business owner user-friendly process. We do not need to mire our small, locally owned businesses in more bureaucratic red tape, and we do not need to stranglehold the homeowners when they need to make applications for home improvement. So that's on you guys. And finally, to the members of this council, this decision will be a legacy decision that will be here long after you leave your public positions. It is a decision that can impact the historical and heritage fate of one of the founding communities of Caledon. Bolton has more than paid its dues. Now it is incumbent upon each of you as counselors to make a well thought out, informed, and reasonable decision about Bolton's singular identity. Think long and hard about a vision, not only for Bolton, but for Caledon. And please make that decision wisely with a view to what Bolton will look like, not just in the next few years, but for the rest of its days, respectfully.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anybody else? At this point, if there's no further questions, I am now going to go to council. Any members of council that wish to ask any questions for clarification? Councillor DeBoer.
Thank you. And Ms. Cooper makes a very good point, and I'm going to ask this when we talk about the CIP as well. But with the report, are you and can you speak to, for example, our building section, Sally, and come up with a program in that how an application is going to be dealt with? How an application can be dealt with at the building department, and for example, can it be dealt with as a priority, for example, a priority application, maybe moving to the head of the line? Can the building department do that? What kind of impact will it do on the rest of the services we provide? And, you know, potentially, is there an opportunity, for example, a deferral of some of the building permit fees to put some extra support to it? To make some of these things work. I'm just wondering if any of that stuff has been talked about when the report comes forward.
Councillor DeBoer, we have been meeting with building section staff and looking at the processes as we have with the development staff. So we do have a good handle on how we will plan to integrate the whole heritage permit process. We haven't addressed something like deferral of building permit fees. That may be something we would need to bring to council if that's a suggestion you're looking for. That could be certainly be a recommendation that comes out of this if we're looking to streamline or if that's what your aim is there.
Well, and I think that in the initial early stages, I think that mm-hmm. there's got to be something there to compensate. I do think it potentially could warrant, be mm-hmm. warranted. And I know that we're talking about a review of it somewhere down the line. Maybe, you know, we start off with something of a deferral and then down the line we review as to whether it's necessary. Even something as simple as having the same examiners dealing with applications within this area, so there's some consistency or some familiarity with the process, familiarity with the built form, familiarity with how to do it.
Yes, we've spoken internally about having a heritage permit review team that would help have the same staff and members involved, so that we do have that continuity.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'd be interested to know if there is some staff interest to look at what the impact would be on deferral. I can't imagine initially in the first little while it'll be a large number of applications. Probably the cost isn't there, but the individual applications might be, you know, the ones that do come might be assisted with having it happen and some sort of funding support for it.
Your interest in the deferral is to provide as an incentive or what?
Not necessarily an incentive, but a proof that that there's a partnership here, and that is that the town, through wanting, desiring, through an economic benefit, has that these developments or these redevelopments, you know, there's a bigger goal and there's a bigger benefit. Mm-hmm. And part of that bigger benefit comes from the rest of the community being able to benefit from it, is what my thinking is. It's similar to what we do in agriculture. We talk about agriculture having the greater good. And really the benefit ends up being paid for by the individual providing the good. There isn't anything coming back, and here's an opportunity. We're talking about built form, essentially. The only thing we have to really support it with would be a funding mechanism like the CIP for this that wouldn't be covered under that's residential, so it'd be like a CIP type program, or a deferral of some part of the building permit fee in support of trying to get to where we want to get to. And that's the community, the broader community, supporting the activities of the people that are actually, so to say, playing along with it.
Okay. All right. Councillor Groves.
Thank you. Sally, would there be any opportunities in the document or in this process for any type of monitoring once it comes to council and once it's in force?
Councillor Gross, yes, we actually added a section on monitoring in the October 30th version of the plan, and it addresses small items like by putting the heritage permit process into our Amanda property management system, we'll be able to track all of the heritage processes, the timelines, and so on, which we could certainly report to council on annually as you get reports on the CIP programs and so on. That's an easy do there.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Mayor Thompson. We're in receipt of some correspondence from the local business owners, so I'm wondering if, Sally, maybe you can, as simply as possible, make a comparison or as to what, I think there seems to be some concern that there would be additional red tape or that, permitting and applications would become more difficult for property owners within the HCD. I'm wondering if you can maybe explain a little bit, how it compares to what you're already doing as a heritage officer.
Where there is a planning application review, I provide the heritage component of that planning application review. So there is an ongoing, and there's already exists a process for that. In essence, the heritage permit is what we've got going is basically a one-page draft right now. It's a very straightforward document that would not be an onerous thing to fill out from that point of view. And it would be tracked through the site plan application. It would become a standalone where there are no other permits required. It would be integrated into the building permit application process. So we're not looking to add an onerous layer. There are some things that we would be looking at for from a design point of view on a heritage permit that, for instance, a building permit would not require. So there may be some overlap there in terms of different material that needs to be provided. But it's not a huge second set of drawings or anything like that. It's not meant to be that way. What the HCD design guidelines do, basically, are provide clarity as to what the town is looking for, what the community is looking for in new build and new construction or alterations. And it provides clarity to both the town and the property owners as to what our long-term or what our objectives are in reviewing or what they're submitting, what we're looking to review. So it's not meant to be an onerous. It is required under the Heritage Act to have a heritage permit process when an heritage conservation district is established, which is why we are looking to bring this forward. It deals with individual property designations as well as heritage conservation districts, so we'd be looking to roll it out for our 116 individually designated properties as well for alterations to them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councillor McClure, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question is, I'm amazed that there's no opposition to this. I'm an antique, and I appreciate older buildings, but some people might not. This is something that obviously everybody in the crowd is for it, and I'm for it. I'm.
Good. You can't give an opinion.
Question.
Oh. No opinion.
Well, isn't it amazing that there's no opposition? he's being difficult. He's something like Marilyn was. I'm confident that Sally will do a good job and make any application for a new building fit this. And thank you.
Thanks, Gord. Councillor Misipelli, any questions?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. I do want to take a second and just thank ERA staff and everybody who participated in the process. It's funny, I was looking at the process slide, and it lays out where there was a statutory requirement to have that meeting, and there's only a few, and there was many, many other meetings. So it shows the depth to which this process involved the community and sought out that opinion, whether it was supportive or whether it was questioning. So I want to thank you for that. And in the end, I think it produced a really good report. And looking at it, it is extremely illustrative, which I know was something you mentioned in your presentation that was asked for. And I think when people come, whether they're a resident or a business owner, this will be a tool that they could use. And so I just wanted to thank you for that. There's been a large expression of support, and to be objective and to make sure I look at this from both sides, there was one slide that talked about the concerns, particularly of the stakeholder group, which was a good mix, residents, business owners, property owners, and the like. And they're the two that we've always known were assessment values and the level of bureaucracy. So I'm not going to go into the level of bureaucracy because I think Ms. Drummond spoke to that. But with assessment, is there any evidence in heritage conservation districts which speaks to that concern? It's legitimate. Obviously, nobody wants their investment to depreciate in value. I'm just wondering if you would be able to speak to that.
Yeah. So in our work on heritage districts, in all of the districts we've worked in, that's a very common concern. And so we constantly try and seek out research. So we've looked at the main piece of research that relates to heritage districts was one carried out by Robert Shipley from the University of Waterloo. We've also looked at a number of other sort of individual studies that weren't necessarily specifically related to districts, but were related to either heritage, individually designated heritage buildings, or just heritage neighborhoods, and sort of financial, economic rejuvenation, that sort of thing. And I mean, what we can say is that in all of the studies we've ever looked at, we've never read or researched anything that showed a negative impact. So everything either looks to stabilize or to increase. And in terms of the study that was carried out on HCDs, there were two studies, one in 2009, one in 2012, and both of them looked at about 32 districts each time. And these were districts that had been operating for at least 10 years or longer. And in both of those studies, they included a mix of districts. So I know we've heard some people make the comment, well, were they looking at residential or at commercial properties? Because obviously that was the concern. And in each one, about half of them looked at, half of them are residential and the other half are either commercial or mixed use, which would be like the village, a mix of uses. In both of those, property values were seen to stabilize or increase. And that's simply a result of the fact that a lot of anytime you have stability in a neighborhood, it generally leads to an increase or stabilization because people know what to expect. So they know what their neighbor, they know what the benchmark is for improvements, and they know that their neighbor is not going to tear their house down and build something that will decrease their property value. So obviously we agree that there should be more research carried out in this field. It's not something that's been heavily covered, but just all we can say is that we have yet to read a negative decrease in property value.
Okay, and so just to delve into that a little deeper, mm-hmm. when you say comparatively it's the same or slightly better, mm-hmm. is that like a regional comparison? Is it actually within that community?
So, yeah, so what they did in the Shipley studies, they looked at, I'll just give you an example. So what they did is they looked at the 32 districts and they used a program called Geo Warehouse, which basically tracks sales properties. As properties sold, they're tracking the price. And what they looked at was basically they looked at the properties within the district and they looked at the properties adjacent to the district.
Okay.
And so obviously there's a lot of other reasons why property values could change. So that's why we say they're not, you know, completely conclusive in that way. But they were comparing the district to the outside neighborhoods.
Okay, because mm-hmm. I think that's probably the best comparison to have as mm-hmm. opposed to, you know, something more regionally.
Yeah.
Is there any evidence with respect to, because I understand it, the heritage conservation districts that come into place, they just seem to be adding. It doesn't seem that they're being any revoked. And obviously, Ms. Cooper made the great point that this is a pivotal moment mm-hmm. where we go from here.
Mm-hmm.
And others have done it before us.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any evidence that speaks to how those communities that have HCDs, how are they received? You know, is there any evidence saying, yes, we like it, no, we don't?
Well, so these studies that I'm referring to, they didn't just look at property values. They're actually just looking at how HCDs have operated. So they're essentially a monitoring tool, but trying to look at a provincial scale. So in each of the studies where they individually looked at a district, they were looking at resident satisfaction, property owner satisfaction. And some of the conclusions that came out of that were basically the longer that a district operates,
the more satisfied people become. And I think that's quite obvious that obviously the longer they operate, the processes all sort of get settled in, people understand the guidelines, and so things run smoother. But I mean, to our knowledge, no, and I know at the Ministry of Ask, there's never been a heritage district removed or revoked, and there's nothing, I guess, stopping a community from revoking a district, but it has never happened.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Councillor Groves.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor Thompson. The town is conducting a few studies. We're looking at intensification. We're looking at the downtown core because it falls within the special policy area. We're looking at opportunities in the core for redevelopment. How would the HCD impact that, or how would it play into that?
Sure. So in terms of intensification and sort of redevelopment, we met with the intensification strategy consultants so that we could better understand what their findings were and how that all related to the special policy area as well, which it seems to have the most impact on what can and cannot happen in terms of the intensification of the village. In terms of how the Heritage District would affect intensification, I would say simply that the guidelines included will help to guide how that development will look. It in no way is saying that there shouldn't be intensification. In fact, we can identify many opportunities within the village where you could build some really wonderful new development. And I think by looking at the sort of contributing buildings versus non-contributing buildings, you can sort of quickly see where there's pockets that are pretty ripe for some sort of improvement. So in no ways is this intended to halt development. It's actually trying to encourage it, but encourage it in a good way that's specific to Bolton.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay. I got one, now that I was going to ask it, but now I'm going to, from Councillor DeBoer and Councillor Downey. The one thing I have spoken with some councillors from other areas, Penetanguishing and Park Credit, and as well as Orangeville. And the one thing that I was hoping for is, so we're going to have a heritage designation bylaw brought forward, correct? My question is, we're going to, I think, just under advice from what I've heard, and I'm just hoping when we do bring this bylaw, we will revoke all the previous bylaws in that district and make one bylaw as the Heritage District.
When you say revoke all bylaws, are you referring to other sort of heritage bylaws? Or?
Well, no. There's a lot of bylaws that are incorporated over town. There's still bylaws on the books that where to tie up your horse.
Right.
The question is it's joking, but if we want to reduce, and we're given assurances of reducing red tape, and I've been advised from hearing from other councillors in these districts, they said they found out Park Credit said, like, even with what they want to do as far as putting patios and different things out was the old bylaws were preventing. They had to go and eliminate all the bylaws and just make the heritage bylaw
right.
be the law, the zoning bylaw for the area. And I guess I need to say zoning bylaw if I didn't make myself clear. It's late
right.
today, but but I guess what I mean is just one zoning is heritage. I've heard from them. Make sure it's only a heritage district zoning only. Versus having all the other zoning sitting there that it just makes it encumbrance. And I guess I'm asking you for your opinion on that. Is
sure.
that what we're doing here?
Well, my first thoughts are that I've never come across municipalities removing all their other zoning. But what I'll start by saying is that under the Ontario Heritage Act, the Heritage District Conservation Bylaw does take precedence if there's a conflict, only so far as that conflict exists.
Yeah.
So... In the report at the back, we have policy recommendations, and that's where we've tried to go through any of the policies that do sort of overlap and identify where we've seen either some sort of a conflict or where things could be smoothed out or where maybe there needs to be some sort of other policies that would sort of support this. So my first thoughts would be, no, I wouldn't just erase all the bylaws that exist. That might be a bit drastic, but I think it's just being clear that there should be, in the same way that we're talking about monitoring, you know, the time it takes to process permits and trying to see how this is all functioning and making sure it functions well, I would maybe monitor how well we're carrying out these policy recommendations, because I think policy recommendations often get forgotten, and they're pretty key to keeping everything in line, because I think avoiding conflict where possible is helpful. Yeah.
I think it's the multi-layers that prevent mm-hmm. anything getting done, and I think that's what was the advice that I've heard from those areas that have made this work, and they said they really started to come ahead to make huge improvements when they got those other encompassing bylaws out of the way, and you dealt with one, which is Heritage District.
Right.
My ask is, before this comes back as a council report, can you please look into Port Credit and look in a Penetang machine to see what they've done to see if that works here? Could I ask for that?
Sure, we can. I'll look to Sally too.
And Port Credit's a real good example, because they found that that's the only way, and you look at it, it's working. So if we could please look at that. I want to make sure we're doing the best thing we possibly can for our residents. Okay? All right. There's no further questions. I want to... All right. I'll Oh, can you got to turn your mic on there, Harold?
There. Harold Whitehead, 96 King Street West. Just a comment. I think it's great. It should stop a lot of the butchering that we've seen of historic properties, often by owners that, you know, eliminate historic details and then move away. A question, how many historical districts are there in Peel right now?
In Peel region?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, because I don't know the boundaries of Peel region perfectly.
Like in Brampton, Mississauga, for instance?
Well, no. Mississauga, there's Streetsville.
Clarkson,
Meadowvale,
Meadowvale, Clarkson, Port Credit. I'm missing one. There's one more big one.
Okay. I don't
know. And they're doing downtown Brampton, is that right?
Yes, there's one underway in Brampton right now, Main Street Brampton. It's not been designated, but it's in the process.
Okay. And it's
Churchville.
Church.
And it's working in all those areas, is that right? Would you say so?
I would say it's working all those. I would say it's working in 121 districts across the province.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. At the first meeting, I asked about the historic properties that are in the east end of the valley that aren't included in the area, and I think it was told that perhaps at a later date those individual properties would be added to the list of protected properties, is that
so
correct?
So I think so in the study phase, when we sort of had to research the area and sort of formulate looking at the policy framework and all the different options for how to protect things, what we suggested, I think, if I remember correctly, were a couple things that the King Street East neighborhood, which I think you're referring to, mm-hmm. that in terms of concentration of historic buildings, it just didn't have the concentration to merit an HCD. But within that area, there were definitely some very significant individual buildings. So we suggested a couple policy tools. So under the official plan, there's a policy on areas with cultural heritage character. So that was one suggestion we made for the entire neighborhood. And we also suggested that all those individual properties we mentioned should be listed on the heritage inventory, so that at least they were on the radar, I think, as well as in the Amanda system, so that as any proposal came forward, at least Sally was aware of that, and that then further research could be done in individual Part 4 designation under the Ontario Heritage Act could be pursued as well.
Okay. Yeah. Would that be up to council then to put those properties on the list?
Well, Sally could definitely look into putting those properties on the register. And in terms of Part 4 designation, anyone can bring forward that suggestion. So a property owner could come to Sally and say, I'd like to designate my house. How can I move forward? So that's something someone could do on their own volition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else from the public?
I'm Bill Stubbs, Calvin Village. Not really relevant here.
I'm Bill Stubbs from Calvin Village. And my big thing is, when we do something with a historic building, don't sign its death knell. And what I'm trying to say is, in Calvin Village, we have a water problem. And we have historic buildings that are sitting on dry stone foundations, and they are literally sinking into the ground because the ground has been raised. The great drainage has been changed so that the water runs towards the building. The salt from the highway flies up onto the old antique bricks, and guess what? Bricks have a rating called internal rate of absorption, which tells how quickly they will disintegrate. And the old bricks are worse than the current bricks. Insiders for building inside a house destroy quicker than bricks for outside. So when you have a historic building and you have a historic area, do not raise the road. Do not raise the sidewalk. And do not put salt against the brick. Use your head. And it's a planning issue. You're supposed to have, I think it's 6 inches of foundation showing under brick. Have at least 6 inches. And if you got a foot, that's better, because cement will handle the salt better than brick. And we have these old bricks, and they're nice. But when you go look at a, there's a sidewalk, and there's brick, and there's rotten brick. Think about it. In other words, I think with that, you can have a really good historic district with historic houses that are going to live, stay for years, rather than ones that are going to sink into the ground, and guess what? You've asked for the bulldozer in 25 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Anybody else? If not, it's 7:58. I will call this first meeting closed. Thank you, everybody, for coming. We'll try to aim to start the next one at 8 o'clock sharp if we can, if that's okay. It's now after 8 o'clock. It's now 8:01. I am now going to move into the second meeting regarding the Six Villages Community Improvement Plan. I will now ask Paula Strawn, urban designer and senior development planner for the Town of Caledon, to confirm that the notification was conducted in accordance with the Planning Act for the public meeting.
Mayor Thompson, yes, it has.
Thank you, Ms. Strawn. Now I'll call on Mr. Tyrell, of the M&M Group to begin his presentation, please.
Good evening, Your Worship, members of Council. I'm pleased to be here tonight to present to you the Six Villages Community Improvement Plan. My brief presentation will touch on the purpose of the Community Improvement Plan study, our process and timeline, the consultation program leading to the Community Improvement Plan, the proposed community improvement project areas for the Six Villages, the Village Action Plans, the financial incentive programs, and I'll conclude with a discussion of the next steps. The purpose of the study was to prepare a community improvement plan for Caledon Six Villages as designated under your official plan. Those being Alton, Caledon Village, Cheltenham, Inglewood, Mona Mills, and Palgrave. The CIP sets forward a plan for the revitalization of each of those villages through the establishment of financial incentives to promote beautification, the establishment of action plans intended to improve the public realm of the Six Villages, design criteria to evaluate the financial incentives and to guide those improvements, as well as some recommendation for further study. As I've said earlier, the study areas for the Six Villages Community Improvement Plan includes all six of the town's designated villages. With your staff, we embarked upon this project roughly a year ago and have had prepared a background report, have had extensive public consultation, and we are here at the statutory public meeting and anticipate bringing the matter back to Council next month for adoption. As I mentioned earlier, there's been extensive consultation leading to the preparation of this community improvement plan. We had two public workshops first to consult on the discussion paper back in March. There were two separate meetings covering, the first covering Alton, Caledon Village, Cheltenham, and Inglewood specifically, the second covering Monta Mills and Palgrave. We were back for a second set of public workshops to consult specifically on the incentive programs and action plans, and we had those meetings in June, again on June 8th, to consult on Alton, Caledon Village, Cheltenham, and Inglewood, and on the 24th, to consult on Monta Mills and Palgrave. I should also note that there was extensive external agency involvement in the preparation of the CIP, including Peel Region, conservation authorities, the provincial government, and the school board. The community improvement project areas are the geography to which the CIP will apply, and with the CIP, staff will be bringing forward bylaws to designate community improvement project areas, and those, as we did with the Caledon East Community Improvement Plan, those community improvement project areas will consist of two areas, an area to which the financial incentives will apply and an area to which the action plan areas will apply. The community improvement project areas have been proposed based upon consideration of land use, built form, and heritage context within each of the village. In some cases, we had the benefit of more detailed land use plans to help provide a basis for the establishment of community improvement project areas. And in particular, we have a village plan in Inglewood, land use designations in Caledon Village, and a preferred land use alternative as part of the ongoing Alton Village study. I don't intend to walk through the specific details of how each of the community improvement project areas are applied, but I will offer a couple of points. First, that the recommendation will be that you, council, pass a bylaw designating each of these, designating each of these community improvement. Okay. The recommendation is that you designate a bylaw to establish each of the community improvement project areas for the six villages. That will be handled outside of the community improvement plan itself, at least that's our recommendation, and that the community improvement project areas can be changed through simple enactment of a bylaw. As I said, I don't propose to go through the geographies of each of the CIPEAs for you this evening, but I'm certainly happy to answer any questions about them. One of the main aspects of the Six Villages Community Improvement Plan is the establishment of action plans specific to each village. So I remember the last time I stood before council addressing you on the topic of this project, there was a question of addressing the uniqueness of each of the villages, but also equitable application of the incentive programs, and that's the balance that we've tried to strike in this document. So with the action plans, they are specific for each village, and they address proposed public realm improvements and needs that are specific to each village. They also address potential future study, such as heritage conservation or the need for parking studies. All of the improvements that are suggested and all of the actions that are outlined in these plans were a principal topic of the second round of public workshops back in June. Certainly the improvements that we're outlining are conceptual and would require further study and would be subject to detailed design and further consideration by council. Again, with the action plans, I do not propose to spend the time talking about the specific details of each of the action plans, but I'm certainly happy to address any of the questions, either from council or members of the public, as we have done this evening before the public meeting. The next aspect of the CIP is the financial incentives. And unlike with the action plans, there is a set of financial incentives that apply broadly to all six villages, and there are a wide range of packet programs that have been proposed to provide for flexibility. However, the eligibility for each of these incentive programs would be subject to village-specific design criteria that are outlined precisely in the CIP, and those are unique to each village. So the improvements and the access to financial incentives must recognize and be consistent with the unique character of each village, the scale, and the design vision for each of the six villages. As with your Bolton and Caledon East community improvement plans, it's our recommendation that these programs be administered and funded by council on an annual basis. And just briefly, there are eight financial incentive programs that are proposed in the draft community improvement plan. A facade improvement grant, a improvement grant to deal with signage, a landscape and parking area improvement grant, an improvement grant to deal with property conversion and reuse, energy efficiency retrofit program, a building accessibility grant, rebates to planning and building fees, and a tax increment equivalent grant. The programs are similar to what is already provided for under the Bolton and Caledon East community improvement plans, but there are some differences given the different context of the six villages. And finally, Your Worship, our next steps. Upon hearing input from council and members of the public this evening, we will finalize our recommendations and finalize the CIP as well as the bylaw to establish community improvement project areas and bring that back for council's consideration at a subsequent meeting. In addition to the CIP and the implementing documents, we will be preparing some implementation materials to support the CIP, and that includes a brief executive summary report that complements the CIP and will be an accessible and understandable document for members of the public and the business community, an administration plan for staff to work with to administer and implement this plan, as well as a monitoring framework to deal with the measurable performance indicators and what our recommendations are to council and staff in terms of how this plan should be monitored and evaluated on an ongoing basis. Your Worship, that's my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tyrrell. Are there any comments from the members of the public that are here tonight? If so, please step forward to the podium, clearly state your name and address, as it is part of the public record and is also being recorded tonight.
Paul Morin, 8771 15 Side Road in Aaron Township. Your Worship, councillors. I'm honored to have a business in Caledon, in Alton, and I'd like to speak for all of the Alton Mill tenants. We frequently are the front line of a lot of people who come to visit Caledon, and everybody who comes to the Alton Mill comments on the historical nature of Alton and the beauty of the buildings and also some of the decay that's going on in it. But the comments about it just being such a beautiful, quaint old town with such an imprint of history, given the character of the buildings, I and on behalf of the grants and all the tenants at the mill would like to see CIP move forward as rapidly as possible. As well, I'm currently leasing from town, lease to own the Old Town Hall in Alton. And I'm currently working on it and experiencing so much of the beauty and nature of the characteristics of the individual architecture of that building. If I can just share a very brief little story, in repointing the foundation, I saw a little corner of a rock sticking out. And it took a good day and a half to excavate this huge, huge early step from the church that had been buried as fill in the front lawn. And as I'm cleaning it off, I can see very clearly, much more clearly than any of the building's markings, but this stone has the mason's marks and his detailing on that front step. And there was such a passion with which he did it. And he did it right there on site because you can see all the rubble. That stuff was all carved right on site. There's such a beautiful heritage to be accessed in Alton, and personally I'm very, very honored to just have a small stake at the heritage of Alton. So thank you, and please follow through with the CIP.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Hello, Terry Cutts, 17219 Highway 50 in Palgrave. Just wanted to find out if any of the grants are available retroactively if a building permit was previously applied for before the CIP comes of age. Is there any access to the funds afterwards?
Mr. Tyrell, can you... what are our options on that, I guess?
Through you, Your Worship, the CIP programs are specifically designed so that they are not retroactive. You have to come in, consult with the town, complete your application, get approval for your grant prior to initiating work on the program.
Okay. All right. So, anybody else?
Good evening, Your Worship, councillors. My name is Murray Johnston. I live at 1 Simcoe Street in Mona Mills. I have been there for 36 years, probably one of the last remaining of the first wave that moved in when they built the hamlet. But I'm on Simcoe Street, and my question is more for the CIP for Mona Mills, particularly concerning Alliance Park, the walkways. There's a proposed, my house is number one, so I'm on the south side of Simcoe Street at the west end. So the proposed entrance from Simcoe Street, which I think is a great idea. I have watched for all these years people struggle to get up that hill, slide down and fall, and I think that would be a very good idea. But there's another proposed plan for about 90 yards further up Airport Road for another entrance, which is an extension of the pathway that runs from Lions Park. And the result, Town Council this year has already spent considerable funds, I'm sure, widening the walkway that comes from Lions Park to Simcoe Street. It was widened from 3 feet to 8.5, and then that enters onto Simcoe Street. And the walkway from there is about 140 yards to Airport Road. So building another walkway right behind my property, I don't see the need for, because it's redundant and you'd be putting another entrance there and you have another proposed walkway at the top of the hill, which is another 100 yards up. So as far as access is concerned, people for the last, as long as I've been there, walk out onto Simcoe Street and they follow Richmond Street around. Because Airport Road, it says 60 kilometers, and the signs. And as I told you, I live right at the end of Simcoe. So they say, please don't use your brakes. If you were coming down that hill, those trucks, at 60 kilometers an hour, they wouldn't need their Jake brakes. But the gravel trucks come down there 80, 90 kilometers an hour. So that is just my concern. But as far as all the other developments, my next-door neighbors, They walk every morning, so they follow Simcoe down to Richmond and around. Okay. And since we don't have sidewalks in Mono Mills, I see the main drags are all 40 kilometers, so they are much safer than walking down Airport Road. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Okay, Mr. Tyrell.
Your Worship, based on conversations that we had this evening with several Mono Mills residents leading into the public meeting, we understand that there are a variety of concerns about the conceptual trail network that we've shown in the Mono Mills public realm strategy. So we will be bringing forward a revised plan when the document comes back to you for consideration. And we'll provide some narrative at that point, sir, about the nature of adjustments that we've made and how they reflect conversations that have taken place this evening with Mono Mills residents.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
Hi, I'm Bill Stubbs. I live in Caledon Village. I live at 18488 here in Sahara Street. Well, firstly, I should say, Mayor and Council, I'm happy to be here and give some of my comments on this CIP. As you know, maybe I better read my stuff. Purpose of any bylaws to solve social problems for residents. Mrs. Paula Strawn, in her email to Barb, which I've got, of October 27th, provides the town's position on how the town plans to solve social problems, improve the quality of life for residents, and especially in Caledon Village. Now, Caledon Village is a transition. It is a canary for the coal mine. We are the first town to have a four-lane highway through it. Nobody else has it. We didn't have it 50 years ago. We have it now. So all these other towns are probably going to have a four-lane highway feeding into it. We've got a plan. She states that it is to improve the quality of life for residences. Residents generally focuses on revitalization and enhancement of commercial properties, particularly in the downtown core of a community. She goes on to indicate that the notion of walkability, safety, and contributing to residents' health is the core theme of the Six Villages CIP. All villages' action plans outline community-specific streetscape, roadway, and connectivity enhancements that will promote walkability. See, you can see that I've got TIAs, transitional ischemic attacks, meaning strokes. Hopefully I can get by. No mention is made of the suitability of residences for use as residences or the town's commitment that a CIP will solve this problem. Ms. Strawn goes on to state that we, I don't know who that means, whether it's she and the consultant, whether it's council or who, hope, not will, hope. No proof is given that this helps clarify how the proposed CIP will work to improve the quality of life for village residents in the town, and I'm thinking of Caledon. The CIP does not address livability issues for those living north of Charleston Side Road, as identified by Councillor Patterack, which I will get into in a few minutes. Ms. Strawn and the town failed to address the issue of quality of life for residents with properties facing or backing onto Highway 10 or 15 Side Road. Okay, in the background, everybody knows I'm a veterinarian, so we're going to use a retrospectoscope. This will bring returning councillors up to speed on the history of the problem and inform the new councillors of what went on in the past. And we'll start in the mid-80s, because this is when the problem really started. And that's when the MTO designated Highway 10 as a special controlled access highway, which is going to happen to all these other villages when 413 Highway comes in. 413 Highway, every cutoff, people get off, zoom up to Dundalk or farther. And it's the main connecting link between Highway 10 and the land to the north. In order to have a safe highway, commercial access egress, in other words, coming and going from driveways, would be limited to existing commercial driveways. Thus, residentially zoned properties would not have access if the zoning was changed. In other words, the zoning is frozen. Nobody told me. A question I have is, did the town know this? I don't know, but I think you guys should find out. Let me digress for a minute. I'd like to congratulate this council for getting at least one of the booklets of the environmental assessment for Highway 10, 1990. It's really good. You've been here for a year. You've done it. Nobody else did. Now, property owners. So in the 80s then, after this special controlled access designation, the MTO decided to start and design a new upgraded Highway 10 with input from the town. And apparently there was biweekly meetings with the town. So the town has approved the design of Highway 10. And the AA document identified many issues. But how many do you think were honored? One. You guess what it was? Who was the owner of the property that was addressed? Well, the old Caledon Township Hall was moved to a location, new location, 100 feet from the highway because it was too noisy. That's the reason it's moved. Also, a subdivision to the north where houses are greater than 100 feet, those owners signed a document that they would not sue for noise damage. Wake up, Bob. So now the EA also says that the town would enforce relevant bylaws. Well, didn't the town have a fill bylaw? How come the highway was raised and the drainage was changed? But according to Mrs. Wynn, who was Minister of Transportation at the time, said that the town was consulted and approved the plans and approved the highway. The interesting thing there, sidewalk, I believe, is on my property. The retaining wall is on Cheryl Diaz's property. Water shut offs are on private property. Bell boxes are on private property. Water shut offs are there. And who approved it? A permit was taken out with the town. So anyway, on June 15th, 2009, councillors Ian Sinclair, ex-councillor, that hated one, by the way, made a delegation to presentation to council. Council was asked to exempt all Caledon Village properties from the fill bylaw so they could raise them up, because the drainage now in one place runs into basement and likely a well. Been that way for 9 years. Commission a survey of existing grades and drainage for all properties on Highway 10 in Caledon Village. Establish a drainage plan for the Caledon Village core area. In cooperation with each property owner, establish a regrading and reinstatement plan for each affected property at no cost to the owner. In cooperation with each affected property owner, establish a plan to help implement measures for stopping drainage, salt and snow being cleared, clearing damage to buildings, and any property access issues. Establish a plan in conjunction with the Ontario MOT to address pedestrian and other safety issues throughout the Highway 10 corridor in Caledon Village. And Ian, give the town a way out. Public good equals public pay, so the province must pay. Assign all Caledon Village issues to one staff person and keep the residents informed. Guess how many of those items were honored, have been addressed? Any guess? Zippo. Zippo. Next page, if I can find it. Okay. So then there was a meeting, council meeting on September 15th, 09. Indicates the council was aware of many residences north of Charleston Side Road are very unsuitable for use as residences, and I'd like to read it from Councillor Patterett. Whereas the widening of Highway 10 to four lanes will soon be completed within Caledon Village. Whereas many of the homes north of Charleston Side Road will experience difficult circumstances for day-to-day living, making those homes very unsuitable for full-time habitation. And he goes on to say that the planning department proceeded in 2010 to rezone properties on each side of Highway 10 north of Charleston Side Road, and that this resolution be mailed to affected property owners. I don't know whether it ever came up at council, whether it was passed or not, but I never heard anything about it. So anyway, on August 10th, 2010, after I had taken a petition up to local residents, we asked the town to do initiate official plan and zoning bylaw amendments for existing residential properties in the downtown core to establish a unified commercial zone addressing planning and stormwater management, include high water uses, which could be changed over whenever sewers come, allow residential in commercial, allow warehousing for mail order businesses, address MTO land use access setback regulations during the rezoning process, and continue the topographic and drainage study already underway, theoretically, as directed by Council Resolution 322-2009, and request staff provide a Ways and Means report to Council at its meeting on September 21st, 2010. Well, Council passed a motion that staff direct to report back in this matter in October of 2010. What happened in November of 2010? Wasn't that an election? Any ideas? When did this matter come back to council? Well, the interesting thing there was that it came back on December 14th and 15th, 2010, and staff was given more time. Now, one question I asked to council, or what that I think you should address, is was there conflict of interest there? Did anybody get an actual or perceived benefit for this report not coming back? I don't know. And I can see one of the local councillors is not there, so he can't say, and Barb doesn't know. So anyway, in December 13th of 2010, Mr. Sinkler made comments regarding the Caledon Village Planning Report, PD210-066. And it talks, and this is a, I'd like to quote Councillor Patterak again, that the residential properties facing Highway 10 will face increasingly difficult circumstances in day-to-day living, making these homes virtually very unsuitable for full-time habitation. Well, things have got worse in the last 9 years. Six years.
Yeah.
Mr. Sinkler then notes that none of the powers given municipalities by a CIP apply to this situation. And now we have a CIP. What's going on here?
We don't have
it
yet.
Pardon?
We don't have it yet.
You're working
okay,
on it.
Okay, Nick.
But anyway, what I'm trying to say is Mr. Sinkler said it won't work. And it's not going to work. But town has said it's going to work. So, therefore, one of my actions requested, I would like to ask each council member to tell me how the CIP is going to address the livability issues noted by Councillor Patterak in his motion. I don't think it is. It's to do with the downtown core. And I could get into problems in my property down the street. So I think I've beaten that to death pretty well. I've got a little more that you can read. But I'd like to talk about my property down the street. I own a building with moderate historic significance on the corner of George Street and Highway 10. And guess where the lot lines are?
Well, they're inside the building. How did this happen? I don't know. You had biweekly meetings? The town did, the previous council, not you. You inspected it. You have a building code, a building inspector. You have a fill bylaw. And where is the foundation? Well, the foundation is only that far below the grade. It's supposed to be 6 inches below the grade when there's brick and 8 inches where there's wood. So guess what the building department did? Did they look at her? I don't know. So now I have a building which won't pass building code, which has salt damage to the brick on the front, and the town plows snow against the brick, and the MTO throws salt against the building with the plow. I didn't do it. Is the CIP going to help me there? I doubt. And then what should happen to the building in the first place? Should it be tore down so the George Street's wider? I don't know. Yes, sure.
Fire.
I'm saying Caledon Village is special. As far as the CIP giving money for doing these things, I think is a good idea if it is viable for the owner of the property. But on this property, my guess is it would cost $150,000 to do anything with it. And the last offer I had to rent that building is $5,000. No, sorry, $500 a month. I've been looking for 18. It's about 2,000 square feet. Upstairs, don't want it. What the heck am I supposed to do? I'm paying taxes on it. I'm heating it. Because if I don't, I'm sunk if I can get anything out of MTO. Okay. And I really think that you're right. Caledon Village should be taken out until you get it nailed down what you're doing with Caledon Village. I have no squawks with the CIP. I have squawks with the amount of money that the people are getting because the costs are going to be ridiculous to get that money. Because Clarence Cunnington and I did the work on those buildings with Heather Broadbent. Heather didn't bother me, I didn't bother her, and we didn't do anything stupid. But now, at $150,000, there's nothing in it. So I think that you need to take Caledon Village out and work on Caledon Village too.
Okay. Well, okay.
Any other questions?
Bill, we're not, but anyway, I'm allowing it just because I know the nature of the thing. But, Bill, if you want to leave your sheets with our clerk so we have a record of what you said, because you've had some good input there tonight,
help us out.
Yeah, I know, and thank you for that. If you don't mind doing that.
No, I can easily do that because it's only the proper thing to do, and I'd have to do that if I was doing a hearing anyway.
No, that's true. But thank you very much.
You get what I mean? I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to give you the facts.
Yeah.
And you two don't know anything went on here. And you haven't got it all. There's lots more.
Yeah.
But at least you have one of the three booklets in the EA, which is a real, I congratulate you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any more questions?
No. Thank you. Anybody else from the public? Yes, please come forward.
My name is Joanne Kreese. I live at 11 Missouri Street in Caledon Village. I have missed all your initial meetings because I was on holidays and had family issues, so I could not attend. I think this is fabulous. I'm a walker. I walk every single day. I love it when you've got more sidewalks as opposed to walking on the side of Charleston. I love it. I think it's fabulous. I think Caledon Village should stay in the CIPA.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, anybody else?
Joyce Logan, 7 Arlo Road, Mono Mills. One thing it doesn't address is just in 2019, it'll be Mono Mills' 200th birthday.
Wow.
And I'd like to know what council's going to do for us. I just thought I'd bring it up here. We did discuss with Paula outside about the plans. I, too, was away and I couldn't attend a couple of the meetings. It was already discussed once of the pathway going from the Lions Park to Airport Road. I mean, we walk around that every day, three times a day, walking dogs, and I don't know why you would do that. And it's through five springs that feed that little ditch that they've made. You guys have finally, parks have finally, that I've been there for 15 years, I'm a newbie, has finally fixed it. Took them 15 years to figure out how to. I don't know whether it was the Mike Holmes, I actually emailed the man. He gave me how to do it, and I emailed it to town, to the Parks Department, and it looks like they've done it, and it's working. So we thank you. One of the improvements I would like to see that wasn't on here is going up the hill from Lions Park, so you're going south, if we could gravel it. You've paved it going up the steep part so it doesn't wash out every time it rains, but if we could re-gravel from there up to the Crescent. Mill Crescent? Millview Crescent, yes. If that could get re-graveled, that would be lovely. I ride my bike there every other day, except when it's raining. And why would we try to lessen the speed on Highway 9? It is 80 kilometers an hour. I can tell you the trucks coming up the hill, if you're coming from Newmarket, so you're going westbound, they're probably doing 50, especially the ones that are loaded. So it's not them that's racing, and glowing it to 60 is now going to be the speeders doing 80 or 90 anyway. As the gentleman has always said, coming down, it's coming into our village at 60 kilometers an hour. I've yet to see someone do 60 kilometers an hour, because I'm always honked at when I slow down to 60, and it's almost like you're going to get rear-ended. One of the things was it says enhance streetscapes, lighting, planters, sidewalks, and benches. Who in their right mind is going to sit on Airport Road? I don't know about anybody else, but isn't that a lot of pollution coming in? So I don't know why that would be. I wouldn't waste your money. And for curiosity's sake, because it is about walkability and stuff, is up at the water tower, most of us that live there all walk there. Tralee has always, they've got lovely walks in there. I love it. Cuts the grass, but they've sold it. And really, technically, it's town property. Could we have it like in the parks and they cut the grass anyway? Trail's already there. It would just be nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
All the rest of the parts, they told us who to talk to. Not you guys.
Anybody else from the public wish to come forward? Yes.
Hi, I'm Clarice Chauvin, 8283 Patterson Side Road, part owner of the church, 17219 Highway 50. I just have some questions. I know we're not supposed to get into specifics, but I'm a little bit confused about the recommendations for Highway 50. It says that the sidewalks are going to be wider, there'll be landscaping and trees. So for that portion of Highway 50, it looks like there's not going to be any street parking then.
Can someone clarify that? Mr. Tyrell?
It, through your worship, is not the intent to remove on-street parking. In fact, a detailed design assignment would be required to implement conceptually recommended adjustments to the Highway 50 core area.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. If not, I'm going to go to the public council for questions. Councillor Groves, you're on the first on the list.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. We've had the CIP in Bolton for a number of years now. There has been some challenges with the CIP. Part of the challenge that we've had is the hoops, I guess, that property owners have to jump through in order to access the grant. I know that some of the property owners just got tired and said, you know what, we're not doing this. So how do we make this process easier for people to access the grant in order to do their facade improvements and whatever improvements they want to do to their property?
Mr. Darrow.
Through you, Your Worship, so one of our deliverables post adoption of the CIP is to bring forward an administration plan that will outline what steps we recommend with town staff should be undertaken to ensure that the process is streamlined. I always say when we're preparing a community improvement plan that subject to meeting the eligibility criteria, that the program needs to be accessible. It needs to be easily accessed for it to be genuinely useful, and certainly that needs to be an ambition of any successful CIP, and we will do our part in our forthcoming recommendations to ensure that that takes place.
Okay, I would strongly recommend that you do that. While it's a great program, and I was part of putting together that program in Bolton with the BIA, and the intent of the program is great because you want to have those facade improvements. You want people to improve their properties, but we want to make the process less cumbersome and more streamlined and easier for people to do so. So I strongly recommend that you figure out how we do it. Thank you.
Can I just follow up on Councillor Groves' question? She was saying about this for the six villages. We'll be able to implement that into Bolton and Caledon East as well if we find a better way to do this. That's already, because those CIPs are already in place, correct? But can we, if we're finding a way to streamline it, are we able to implement it in the existing ones?
Yes, we would want all of the CIPs to work the same. So, yes, we would.
Well, no, I think there's some people sitting here, I just thought it would be good to clarify that. So thank you so much, Ms. Strong.
The last time we made changes to the other CIPs, we brought an amendment along with the final recommendation for approval. So we could do that again if need be.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Councillor Groves, you have another question? Yep.
I did have a follow-up question. While we have these documents, our official plan, we have a review period every 5 years in it. Is there an opportunity to have the same type of review period with the CIP so that if something isn't working, the document can be opened up in 5 years and you can somehow make some amendments, make some adjustments, tweak it, whatever you want to do with it in order to make sure that it's working well?
Mr. Darrow?
Okay. Through you, Your Worship, the monitoring program that we put forward suggests that council should receive regular reporting on the effectiveness of the CIP, ideally annually and ideally through your budgeting process, and that if you wish to make adjustments to the program or staff recommend that adjustments to the program are necessary, it's my view you shouldn't have to wait for 5 years, mm-hmm. That those could be brought forward at any time that they're deemed necessary. And as Ms. Strawn has pointed out, amendments have already been brought forward to mm-hmm. streamline and improve the Bolton Community Improvement Plan since its inception.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. Along that same line, could we or have we talked to the people who have participated in both Caledon and East? I don't think there's been very many, but there's been some. And in Bolton, the ones that have, and get an idea of what they thought of the process, and then the ones that started to access the program and didn't complete it, and for whatever reason that happened. Have you thought of doing that? Have you gone down that road? Can we do that? Would it be very difficult to do? And then using that to fine-tune our process of how we're doing the applications.
Through you, Mayor Thompson. I think what Sandra Dolson, who is with Economic Development, she actually administers the plans that are in place. So I think she would be a valuable contact to ask and to receive input on what she's heard about the programs. One of the realities of the CIP is in order to approve the work, sometimes site plan approval is required, and so we team it up. And when site plan's required, there tends to be more information that is needed to be submitted, and so sometimes the process seems a bit more difficult to go through. And I think that's something that we can talk about. I know that they've set up the fast tracking for site plans, so we can fit in with that. So I guess two things would be, I think Sandra would be a valuable contact, and she might be able to allow us easy access to the people who have concerns.
I think it's important to talk to the individuals that were part of it or that ended up not being part of it, because it is, yes, other parts of the process, other parts of it. And how do we, like prior, like when we talked about the public meeting before, is how do we participate in it as far as an organization, as far as a corporation, in support of the investment? Yes, we're putting the dollar value in, but should we be looking at also including in that a way to work through the process? If we have an application that is working towards improving the looks of a community, like this, that's what this is intended to do, is there some merit in for example, staff participating more in assisting with the development of a site plan if that's what's needed? And helping the applicant or providing a little bit more guidance. Is there merit in that? And I guess that's the question I ask. What happens in other areas? Do other municipalities that are successful in driving more activity, do they participate more in those other pieces that have to happen?
Through you, Your Worship, it certainly is a best practice across the province that there be somebody on town staff that is responsible for facilitating the CIP, and that they work closely with applicants to ensure that there is, you know, success and support from town staff in administering an application to gain access to the incentives. That's absolutely a best practice. In my experience, that's Sandra Dolson's role.
Ms. Dolson? Yes.
Thank you. through you, Mayor Thompson, to Councillor DeBoer, I would be happy to contact everybody who's been approved for CIP grants and see what they thought of the process and bring that back, whether just through an email or bring it to council at any time. I will say that, as Paula was speaking about, that often the CIP, because of the changes or types of changes being made to a building, that sometimes it requires a site plan or a building permit. And if somebody was going to do those changes on their property, regardless of CIP, they would require to go through those processes, and they are not processes that we can eliminate. So I don't want to have anybody fearful of going through a CIP process. Often facade improvement, landscape, things like that do not require site plan. Often they do not require building permit, and the CIP process in itself is a very simplified process. There are some basic criteria you need to meet, you know, a couple of quotes. We certainly need drawings. We need something on file to state what you are doing to your property, and you know, we hold you to it, so to speak. But I can say that the process itself is not complex, and I'm always available to speak to or even meet with anybody at their site or here at Town Hall to talk about it.
Okay. I'm not asking that the process, like, pieces become out of it, because mm-hmm. you just can't do that.
No.
The other part is just making it more understandable. Now that we're to the six villages plus the two, Caledon East and Bolton, is there some merit? And I found the presentation with the Heritage District and the handbook that they had. Is there, can we be looking at a handbook that would kind of lay out what's wanted here using the same method? Because I know that the one I was involved in was a sign change and a sign, like a pylon sign,
mm-hmm.
and trying to get what's expected or what's desired as what would qualify, what's desired and what wouldn't qualify, and just having it fairly easily laid out in that picture format is to giving examples of what would qualify and what wouldn't qualify as an example, and then how you would work through the process. And I found that it would be good from an advertising point of view as promoting the program, but then you can also end up, because we're going out to the villages, it's going to be something that you can take it one step farther and be able to promote a little bit better. So whether there's any benefit that. And then the only other question is there any of these CIP committees where they actually have citizen participation as far as the review of the application and the merit of an application? I know we deal with it with staff, essentially, right? Is there any merit to, because that was one of the comments that I had got tonight, is that why don't we have it where it's the residents within the communities looking at what should or shouldn't potentially be approved? And I don't need an answer tonight. I think no. It's just something down the road as to whether it works anywhere or whether it doesn't work, whether it just complicates the issue. I'm perfectly fine with waiting to have some information from the report. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor McClure.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. And it's been a long night, and I'm just disappointed. I'm from Ward 2, and nobody's complaining from Cheltenham and Terracotta. So, I don't know. I don't know. I'm starting to get worried. Okay, thanks.
Okay. There's no further questions from council. Is there any further questions from the public before I call the meeting to an end? Yes? Bill, you have to come forward and state your name and everything, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
First thing I'd like to say is KISS. Keep it simple. We don't need another bureaucracy. We need to have things that people say, okay, we got a problem, let's solve the problem. Secondly, there has to be an incentive for the property owner to go through the process. I know we're going to have engineering drawings. How much do they cost? I don't know, but they cost. So therefore, I would suggest that since this is really for a public good, pardon? Yes, it'd be no charge. Secondly, what it'll do is it'll make staff really want to do things in a speedy manner. In other words, I can't just fill out my timesheet. Somebody will say, why have I got 100 hours on this? I think that that's it. Because with me, in the past, I did building. We did historic buildings. Dummy. I should have sold them. I mean it. Honestly. It didn't pay. In the long term. For one time, it paid for me to go to university, and I did well. Now, forget it. And there's, I don't know how many empty commercial buildings there are in Caledon Village. I know of a cousin that has an empty hotel in Alton. Why aren't they empty? Why are they empty? I don't know. Ann did a heck of a nice job on that building. Now, why is it empty? There's got to be a reason. And another side is I saw the for sale thing for the psychologist building just south of me. Taxes. Guess what? Close to $13,000 a year for a single person professional? That's about $50 a day. Who wants it? Would you guys want it? To run an office out of? $50 a day taxes? Think of us. When I was in university, they said, you're either a price taker or a price setter. You guys are the price setters. Think of us, the price takers. Thank you. Oh, I'm Bill Stubbs.
After that, I think we will call it a night. Thank you, everybody. I'll call the meeting now closed.